ethnic splits, and then also keep all these foreign powers at bay. It's extremely difficult, and I really hope that things turn out well for the people of Syria.
Yes, and we will keep, of course, on it. Thank you so very much, Mohammed Bazzi, director of the Hagop Kevorkian Center for Near Eastern Studies, journalism professor at New York University. Appreciate you joining us today. Bye.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And thanks to Summer and Lainey and Jade. I'm Esti Dinor. Talk again next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to WORT Madison.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. Sugar and spice, I feel nice. Sugar and spice, so nice, so nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us is always the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
I am he.
You are.
Hey, I discovered something today.
What's that?
It's cold out. Damn, I said when I walked out the door.
It is cold. Did you walk here or take the bus?
No, you know, I broke down.
Oh.
I drove.
Oh, okay.
It's very seldom that I actually drive the car. Yeah. But
your car runs on leaves or something.
It does, exactly.
It's like Ed Begley Jr.'s car.
Goodwill. It runs on goodwill.
It runs on good thoughts.
If you believe in fairies, clap your hands. Off the car goes. So it's an inexhaustible resource. So,
it's getting a little tapped out lately.
I agree.
Mine runs on road rage. It goes really fast.
I was thinking about that. Like, why is that? So here's the thing. So when I drive, I'm not a happy driver, but
I don't drive that often.
I don't drive that often. And but I realize one of the reasons why you get stymied driving, that's the nice way of putting it, is I'll go out of my way to take a route that might even take longer, as long as I can guarantee myself a kind of a smooth flow.
Right. Right.
And I realize it's the constant interruption and having to make up your mind what to do. Okay, now we're coming to a stop. All right, that's fine. This person did something odd. Okay, that's in and of itself not a problem. But how many of those little dings can you take, in a certain amount of time? So I will go out of my way to take sometimes a very circuitous route somewhere if I know that it's going to be relatively... if it takes longer. It's not like efficiency is
no, it's absolutely true.
It's more like the bombardment of information.
Yeah. And it feels shorter to your brain.
Yes, it does.
Brain.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
So, but no, it's kind of laminar thing. Flow is what I want. Smooth and uninterrupted. So I don't drive a lot. I normally take the bus, for environmental and other reasons.
Well, it's like you're getting 1,000 people kind of doing the I'm not touching you kind of annoyance, they're like just kind of poking at you constantly.
Yes. You know what really, can I talk a little bit about that? You know something that really does bother me?
Yes.
Is tinted windows in cars, because I can't see whether the other person is seeing me.
Right.
What is their level of observation?
Right. I mean,
and right now with everyone constantly
taking a nap or something.
Well, everybody's got their little, we love television so much that everyone brings it around with them everywhere they go now. It's kind of like, are you looking
at your... No, it's built into the car.
Yeah, are you looking at your phone now? Because I can't tell if you can see me or not. And I find that there needs to be some minimal level of communication and awareness and my awareness of their awareness.
No,
that's what I'm looking for.
You're right. I agree.
Yeah, that's a problem. Any rate. Hey, there was something very happy this week. Happy, sad at the same time, but it kind of shook me up a little bit as Essie just got done talking about the situation in Syria. And this week, with the overthrow, of course, of the dictatorship there, crowds descended on a prison, which is on the outskirts of Damascus. And this is the place, of course, that the Assad regime had been putting its enemies. People hailed taxis. They waited for buses. They all went to find out, hoping against hope, that their friends and relatives and so on were okay. The city is filled with joy right now, trying to basically, being liberated basically from this tyranny. And people who hadn't heard from family members in quite a while, sometimes as far back as 2012, were all went to prison, to this prison, to try to find out what's going on with their, again, friends and family members. More than 130,000 people were subject to arbitrary arrest and detention by the government over the last, 10 to 15 years. And according to some reports, as many as 15,000 people have died from torture under the Assad regime. But it is gone. So, and we can, like the interviewee in the previous program, we can just cross our fingers and hope.
Yeah.
And maybe if President Trump stays out of the way, things will work okay over there. There could be some bright, shiny object we could bedazzle with him with, I'm sure.
When these types of things happen, that my favorite part is when they pull the statues down.
Oh, yes.
That's always so. There's just this feeling of yes.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, whether it's, Chechnya or whoever.
Yeah. Well, we have a fine tradition of that, of course, in the United States. We, pull down all the statues of George III that were all over the place and back in the Revolutionary period. And in the last few years or so, we've pulled down a few Confederate generals, too. Other symbols of tyranny.
I saw a little, memes are how I, learn things now. And then there was a meme that pointed out that gay marriage was legalized. It was like 10 years ago or something. And it said that it pointed out that gay marriage has lasted longer than the Confederacy. Yeah. So it's part of our tradition.
I never understood the whole thing with the Confederacy. I mean, I moved to Kentucky. I grew up in Ohio. We moved when I was in junior high. And when in Ohio, we were all taught, this is back in the day. I'm sure now it's all completely crazy because, things have changed so much. But back in the day, we were taught, those people.
The War of Northern Aggression.
Those people were traitors,
Yeah,
Those generals broke their oath to the Constitution of the United States. I mean, that was, we were all about the abolitionists.
Yeah.
We were proud of being part of the Underground Railroad and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And then I moved to Kentucky and it's like,
we'll get them someday. We're just biding our time.
I went to the University of Kentucky, and one of the generals, General Breckinridge, was from Lexington, which is where the University of Kentucky is. And you could go, and they would have these. This is again back in the day, folks. Fortunately, it's changed since then. But they would have these ladies in ball gowns. Those giant, fluffy,
the
long,
parachutes.
Big. Yeah, yeah. They looked like giant. Yeah, like a giant bells on their lower halves. That would show you around and talk about what a great gentleman, General Breckinridge was, It's like, and how many slaves did he have? Well, we won't get into that. But he was a gentleman, yeah. So.
Well, I grew up in Minnesota, and we had some regiments that were key parts of certain,
sure.
Big battles and stuff. So we always learned about that in kind of a very proudful kind of way. It's
sure.
Like, yeah, look what Minnesota did its part to help out with the good guys.
And 150 guys in that regiment, all named Ole. Very confusing when they called attendance. Ole Larson.
Ole Hansen.
Yeah, right.
Well, their most effective tactic was bombarding the Confederates with the lutefisk.
Oh, that'll kill you right there.
I surrender.
Fortunately, the Geneva Convention came along later, outlawed lutefisk warfare.
And the big catapults, the lutefisk catapults. Yeah. It was ugly. War is hell.
There was a story that came out about 3 or 4 weeks ago that said that the more recent evaluation of the levels of casualties in the Civil War showed that the South did, as a matter of fact, have much higher levels of casualty. But of course, their infrastructure was so primitive, and that was one of the things. They really were a feudalistic society, and so they didn't have, it was harder to move people around. They didn't have the railroad system.
Mm-hmm.
Once New Orleans fell, they really had no major cities in the South.
Yeah.
And so
probably no real medical care.
No,
I was going to
say. And so connected with that, of course, is problems with medical care and so on. So, yeah.
Because most of them didn't die, like, you know, in battle. I mean, they die from infections and things like that.
Scrofula and herpes and things. Well, that's a whole other story anyway.
Back to the Southern Bells.
Yeah. Ding dong.
The reason she was called Scarlet.
Oh, well, yeah. That's overtly in the movie. That's what, you know, Rhett forces her to go to this meeting with these ladies wearing, basically dressed like a prostitute. You know? That was one of the high points. And that's when, of course, Melanie comes over and says, "Oh, Scarlet, you know, come and meet my guests," you know. So then they all had, because Melanie was the essence of ladyhood. So then they all had to follow Melanie's lead. Yeah, it's a strange movie. It really is. If you watch it, although you know, it's one of those movies. There are elements of it that still hold up today, and I think the element for me, because it's Birth of a Nation was good filmmaking. I mean, you can separate that from the content. One of the things is what happens to the little person when your whole world falls apart, and that's something that's relevant no matter what context.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of interesting.
I loved old films when I was a kid and in high school and stuff. So I watched Birth of a Nation somewhere, probably at the library, and I was confused because
good old Bertha.
You know, I was confused because the KKK were the good guys. I couldn't wrap my head around that when I was 17, and it's like, what's going on? I don't understand this.
Yeah, Well, there you go. Today we can basically...
Now I get it.
Now you get it, now that they've won. And you can hyper-blast that propaganda in every nook and cranny of a person's mind now with the crazy, crazy new technology.
I mean, the Patriots. Patriots of the South. So.
Yeah.
Well, here's something that's pretty shocking. Republican women are annoyed at the GOP Congress because they won't let them run committees.
Oh, yeah.
For the first time since the 114th Republican-led Congress, it appears there won't be any women leading House committees. Mm-hmm. Republicans have already named who they intend to take over each committee, but it won't be official. Mm-hmm. But there are no females among the committee chairs.
Mm. Never thought those face-eating leopards would eat your face, did you?
Exactly. The new Congress also has a more significant gender gap. For the first time in 46 years, there will be fewer women in Congress.
Mm-hmm. Full speed reverse.
I guess. Canada says that if Trump slaps on these tariffs he's talking about, they've got some tariffs of their own they might throw on.
You think?
Exports to U.S. of they put tariffs on American-made alcohol, so they're going to mess with the booze. They know the Achilles heel of most humans. So we're going to make your booze more expensive.
That's a great idea.
They also talked about. Like heating oil and natural gas and things like that.
Sure. Are,
you know, and then they specifically mentioned Wisconsin as one of the states that would be affected.
Mm.
So.
Wow. Great. Thanks. So
are we great yet?
You probably heard the cabinet that Mr. Populist is pulling together is kind of skewed and a little bit on the income level. But other little interesting tidbits of information been coming out this week about...
just a team of rivals,
Rivals, who's the more of a mega billionaire. Meta just announced, Zuckerberg met with Trump and just announced on Wednesday that they're donating $1 million to President-elect Donald J. Trump's inaugural fund, which means they'll be buying some sloppy joes with that, and the rest of it will go right into Trump's vault, you know. So,
well, that's what happened last time.
Yeah.
The inaugural fund was there was all kinds of corruption on it and questions on where the money went, and they never answered any of them. So.
Right.
But
I don't know if you saw this week, but. The number is a number floating around right now in the mass media of how much money that Elon Musk, of course, the world's richest man, the world's richest man, gave to Trump's presidential bid. And the estimate right now is about $250 million.
Yeah, I saw that.
Dollars that they gave.
Yeah, but, you know, I gave $50 to a candidate. So, I mean, you know, this is America. Everybody can participate.
$4.7 billion was given altogether in this campaign in terms of for both candidates.
Here's a suggestion. They should build a whole bunch of statues of Donald Trump.
It's a great idea. I'm itching for a statue right now.
Make them nice and top heavy.
I think that would be great. There was also this week, again, Mr. Populist is really warming us all up here. They had a tax prom this week. Did you hear about this? This was a, you know, you got to go to prom, right? You know, and you'd get your picture taken.
A tax prom.
They had a tax prom. Yeah, this is a, Congress is already starting to negotiate this new tax bill. Fortunately, they've got the women off the committee chairs job, so they'll go through really fast.
Women and numbers.
Yeah,
I mean,
this doesn't mix, right?
Math.
But apparently this is, you know, the corporate tax rate could drop again. Tax breaks for research and development could come back. They're talking about giant income tax cuts. So there's a real sense of, dare I say it, I don't know, among the people who are already the wealthiest people in this country. So there is an event that's hosted annually by a group called the Tax Foundation. And so they've decided that they're so freaking excited. They got such a giant tax cut Woody right now that they invited all these people to come have this huge thing. It's basically, it's kind of
are they
like
just rubbing our nose.
It's a tax-a-palooza, you know, kind of. And they're just inviting all these people to, like, you know, there's going to be tons of lobbyists descending. And, you know, and this whole thing with tariffs, that's going to be another.
Yeah.
Well, negotiable.
They'll carve out exceptions.
They'll carve out tons of exceptions, yeah, depending on how much you kiss the giant butt. So, this is they had an open bar. I'm surprised they gave away anything there, but
just railed.
They really, yeah, exactly. None of the good stuff for you.
Woodman's vodka.
I didn't get rich by giving it away. So the kind of the keynote person was a person by the name of Kim Reynolds. Do you know who that is?
No.
Kim is the governor of Iowa and has repeatedly cut taxes, which has made Iowa the heaven on earth that it is today. You want to have your picture taken with Kim?
This is a story from it's from some of the financial press, actually. It's not just the crazy lefties here.
Yeah.
Wall Street expects less regulation under President Donald Trump. Sure. His transition team is reportedly exploring ways to shrink, consolidate, or even eliminate top banking regulators.
Yep.
Elimination of any agency would require congressional approval, but, you know.
But hell.
In interviews.
I mean, that's a slam dunk.
Yeah. In interviews with candidates to lead bank regulatory agencies, Trump advisors asked whether the FDIC could be abolished. People familiar with the matter told the Wall Street Journal. The advisors, which include officials in the newly formed Department of Government Efficiency, which it doesn't really
it's
exist.
Not a thing. Yeah. it's like crypto.
They also asked the candidates if the deposit insurance could be absorbed into the Treasury once the FDIC is dismantled.
Oh, my Lord.
And also involved discussions about potentially consolidating or restructuring the FDIC, the Federal Reserve. Another plan that was floated involves the creating one agency regulating banks. Last month, Musk called for the elimination of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau.
Of course.
And they add, which then you can tell this is written by the financial press, which just hit banks with a cap on overdraft fees.
So, yeah.
Those poor banks got hit by that.
Yeah, because they're not making any money off that for no apparent reason. The thing about it is right now, I mean, I don't want to scare people because this is just a wish list right now. And you know, who knows how much of this is actually going to happen. But it gives you a very clear, why is this information not being broadcast 24/7, that this is what they're really all about.
Well, why wasn't it examined 6 months ago?
Right.
I mean, we knew this. Yeah. We knew this is what they stood for.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You know, if you paid attention, but they needed to get it out to the people who, you know, Googled who paid tariffs on, you know, November 15th.
Right.
Or is Biden still running on election day?
I mean, right. So. Yeah. Yep. Only at the mouth.
Not so much. He's...
But we really have firmly planted our foot in the Wayback Machine, haven't we?
I mean,
we're going to repeal the 20th century. I mean, it's clear that's what they were trying to do.
Right, right.
We're going to get back to the Gilded Age, and that's clear that's what they were trying to do.
Well, I mean, you know, this is all pre-depression strategies.
Right.
I mean, you know, get rid of all the bank regulation, you know, and throw in the tariffs and cut taxes for the rich and cut services.
Elon Musk is the new J.P. Morgan.
Yeah.
So. Okay.
But my favorite story of the week...
Okay, you got a favorite.
I got a favorite story, and it's not quite as heavy.
Okay.
Donald Trump Jr.'s, quote, fiance, actually ex-fiance, they haven't officially announced it because he's been, like, cheating on her for 6 months.
I just thought that was par for the course. is that supposed to surprise me?
So I'm talking about the Kimberly Guilfoyle.
She's a shouter.
She's like a California condor. She rips the head off her mate after sex, but which Donald Jr. apparently likes.
Doesn't need.
I'm not using it anyway.
You can have it.
Then the coke can go right into my neck.
Yes.
but anyway, so he's kind of quite sort of softly dumped her. I mean, he's been and recently he's been seen publicly with this rich model whose family is
again shocked
super wealthy.
Yeah,
but they announced this week that Kimberly is going to be the ambassador to Greece.
Oh. Ambassador to Mongolia already filled.
It's like, Dad, can you get rid of her for
me?
Oh
my God. It's a payoff.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's like if you keep your mouth shut.
Yeah.
And that's a sweet
gig.
That's
a good job.
I mean, there's certain ambassadorships that are sweet. You know, Paris, probably the number one.
Yep,
and then, you know, London.
Yeah.
And Greece is right. It's like a 4-year Mediterranean vacation.
Oh, that'd be great.
But the best comment I saw is somebody on one of the stories asked if Greece still knew how to get a hold of Perseus. It's a Medusa joke.
I'm sorry, I didn't get that. That's great.
I thought it was brilliant.
You know, I got to say that though her hair is not snaky, but there is something odd going on with her mouth.
She's got the cartoon mouth.
Yeah, she's got had that one of those things that sometimes people do where they
look like that
enhanced.
Remember
the
Muppet band and they had the female singer who kind of the Janis Joplin type.
I will never be able to look at her again without thinking of the Muppet band. Poor Kimberly. Yeah, but I just remember her giving speeches and she was like, she has this staccato bellowing way of speaking that's really off-putting, but apparently, who knows?
I just can't
tell what's off-putting and what's not anymore.
I just love the fact he cheats on his fiance, wants to dump her, and then, daddy helps out.
Well, it's good when your dad's the king, I mean, that's the way, that's how all this
exiler.
Is working. Exiler.
Yeah, so.
But
and then,
place nice.
And yeah, well, they needed to have it nice so she wouldn't spill the beans and stuff. But, but then I also, this is sad, but I read the story that he dumped her because his dad didn't like her. She dressed.
Oh.
He didn't like the way she dressed because she's pretty kind of a flashy dresser.
You want to vomit?
And he thought that the new one would be somebody that his dad would approve of. And he's like what 45 years old or something. I mean, it's not like he's 14.
Yeah.
I mean,
I try so hard to pull back from the psychodrama of Trump and just focus on what does it really mean that a person like that is in charge. But I hear stuff like that, and I just get so filled with nausea.
I know.
It's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
You know?
So,
ugh.
I got an email at melonfloydmailbag@gmail.com from Christopher.
Okay.
And Christopher says, in response to my story about Minnesotans and Lutefisk, he said, did you hear the biblical story where Jesus fed 5,000 people with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish? Jesus was passing out lutefisk, and suddenly everyone was full. No, Jesus.
That's fine. I'm
no,
good.
No, Jesus. I couldn't eat another bite.
Yeah, I'm good. Love it. Ah, yes. Another miracle debunked. Oh, dear. Hey, here's a, I love this story just because, you know, you got your high grade, you know, broligarchs, right? You know?
That's a great name.
You got your high level broligarchs, but you got the wannabes too, because you know they don't really have a very, I guess you could say, fine grained discriminatory device for getting people into the Trump administration. And what I was amused by this week is he appointed somebody to become his Middle East advisor, a man by the name of Massad Boulos. And Massad has a reputation, apparently. He's a Lebanese American whose son is married to Trump's daughter, Tiffany.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we got to have everybody in the
Tiffany,
family.
Yeah, I mean, it's going back to monarchy here. But apparently he's been billed as having a... as being a billionaire, but it turns out he's not a billionaire. In fact, it's really unclear what his assets look like. This is one where, because he was related, right, he comes in under the wire. But apparently, Boulos Enterprises we're not sure exactly what's going on with this. Records show that Mr. Boulos has spent the past two decades selling trucks and heavy machinery in Nigeria. Well, that's nice. The company made a profit of less than $66,000 last year, which I just want to inform our maybe mathematically challenged that that's nowhere near a billion. Not even close to a million.
I cleared that last year.
That's right. And you were sucking at the government teats.
I wasn't even working.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, another person who may or may not have been rich at one time, Mike Lindell,
yeah,
says his cash-strapped mind pillow business took a $1.6 million loan from a payday lender.
Oh no!
At 400% interest.
Oh, see, this is why I'm too soft-hearted. I hear somebody that's evil that's on the downslide, and I feel bad for him. You know? It's like, oh no. He was riding high, and now he's a figure of fun. Hey, I do want to make a correction to something last week. And the correction... it wasn't my mistake, but somebody looked into it more closely. Remember last week when I said that Macy's had this gigantic error because an employee had hidden more than $150 million, and you said, was it theft? Was it were they skimming it?
Yeah.
And the report I had said yes, that what it was. It turns out it's not. What was interesting was the employee did intentionally make these erroneous accounting entries, but the reason why was kind of sad. He was a very, very good, very faithful employee, and he didn't want people to know how much money they were spending on, this was on shipping things, because he was afraid it would look bad for their bottom line. So he was trying to hide it, apparently, in order to make the company look less bad.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of sad.
It is.
So, but it wasn't for his personal enrichment.
Oh, okay.
Apparently,
well, good for him. Yeah, I guess.
So anonymous
better
guy.
Better for him.
Yeah, better for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know. So good for you, anonymous guy.
More financial news, sort of.
Yeah.
The Texas House has introduced a bill to establish a quote strategic Bitcoin reserve.
Oh Lord,
God. Which makes absolutely no sense. It's not like it's oil and you put it in the ground for a rainy day.
But we made it up.
But the legislation was introduced in the Texas House of Representatives Thursday to establish a strategic Bitcoin reserve. The proposed bill would enable the state to start building a strategic Bitcoin reserve. They keep using those terms, and they don't make any sense, by accepting taxes, fees, and donations in Bitcoin that would be held for a minimum of 5 years. Now, Bitcoin is not exactly a buy and hold type of
strategy. No, it's not a hold
strategy.
At all.
It's speculation. It's not even an investment. It's speculation.
Yeah, it's a token for some speculative endeavor. Yeah.
So it's not the kind of thing you say, it's not like a CD where you say, I'm going to lock this away for 5 years. But this is Texas. So the Texas bill aims to provide a way to strengthen the state's fiscal stability. Well, that's, you know, when I think of fiscal stability, I think of cryptocurrency.
The thing is, we tried this for, like, again, hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, and that's why they created the concept of currency underwritten by, you know, a social organism of some sort that had access to a lot of resources, because the promise that was being made as to its value would actually hold up over time. So the government tells you every bill that you...
stand behind this.
Yeah, if you have a paper piece of paper currency, it says right on there, this is, you know, this note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. That's basically a legally enforceable promise to people. And there's nothing like this here. This is just a form of barter, basically.
Well, and there's been
speculative barter.
There have been instances of, you know, massive fraud in some of these things where people have, you know, the money just disappeared, or the people running the exchanges just, you know, screw everybody. I mean,
it's like so many things in our society. There's some way in which people are unhappy with the way in which things are structured, and we're with you on that one. But the idea that you're going to create, by getting together again with the proligarchs, to create some kind of alternative structure in which there's more security seems problematic. There's less security in this kind of Wild West structure.
Yeah. So, well, a lot of the tech bros and the billionaires think they're these great thinkers and innovators, and they'll pontificate about you know, this vision they have, and it's all the same old crap. It's all leave me alone and let me screw as many people as possible so I can accumulate as much money as possible.
They're medieval barons. That's what I'm saying. It's just like the same exact argument. But
they love being disruptors.
But
that's not necessarily a positive thing.
It's not because it took human beings like 7,000-8,000 years to get to a place where we stopped having monarchs and, you know, all this other stuff. And we kind of sort of ooched halfway up the hill, and now we're starting to slide back down again. You know? It's like, yeah, great job. Well, the thing that's really scary to me about this, Mel, and I know that, you know, you're a retired person, and I will be sometime soon. And I worry about this is that so many retirement plans, so many retirement portfolios are starting to get seeded with Bitcoin as part of the option, the array of options that are available. And you don't always know, because your retirement plan might be, you know, they have diversified stock funds have all sorts of things in there. But this is like what happened back in 2008, where people were investing in something that was basically junk. And when it hit that it was junk, and the market started to implode, then it imploded with a much greater level of impact than it would have otherwise if all this junky stuff hadn't been seeded into people's retirement plans you know, basically made into, you know, there basically is a sort of massive opportunity for each of these things to go wrong.
Well, and those were sold, those collateralized, I forget the word, was that it? And those were sold as safe investments, because there were so many, you know, they would take 10,000 mortgages bundle them together and then cut them up into.
How could they all go south at
slice
the same
them up.
Time?
Yeah, exactly. Slice
Stretch
them up.
Your mind.
Yeah. anyway. Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 88.
Where you should get all of your financial advice. Hey, listen, we're as good as that Kudlow guy. Come on. I mean,
who's that Jim Cramer guy, the guy who screams and shouts?
Oh,
Sean's,
my God.
I think there's a fund that does exactly the opposite of what he says, and they do really well. Yes.
Everything.
There's a fund for everything.
Everything Cramer says, do the opposite. Yeah.
I've got like a tiny bit of money in this fund called Nance, and it tries to mimic the stock trades that the Democrats in Congress make. It's named after Nancy Pelosi. And it's doing pretty well.
Nance.
But anyway, we have to play some announcements here, but first I just wanted to remind you that you are listening to WRT 89.9 FM, that you might be listening in the future, because we put all of our shows up on the archives page. Thanks to Mindless Minion D-Cubed. You can listen on Spotify or Apple Pods or wherever you get your pods, and also use the WRT app. That's a very, very handy little thing, and it's free. So, all right, we're going to take a brief break, play some announcements, and come back with...
The list of most mispronounced names.
Oh. Is that just like from me?
Yeah. You haven't seen me sitting here scribbling these down, have you?
You keep a list every year. Yeah, it's our annual tradition of things that Mel misspelled.
That and the airing of grievances, yes.
Oh, and what have I got here? Oh, the fake death guy got hit with divorce papers.
Cool.
Surprisingly.
Support for this program comes from WORT's listener sponsors and Isthmus Newspaper. Isthmus is back on newsstands the first Thursday of every month, and now a nonprofit. Isthmus continues to expand its independent coverage of local government, the arts, and all things Madison at isthmus.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and the Wine and Hop Shop, located at 1919 Monroe Street, specializing in home brewing and winemaking supplies for over 40 years. Open to in-person shopping or order online for curbside pickup, in-Madison delivery and shipping of supplies at wineandhop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Bernie's Rock Shop, located at 901 East Johnson, and our new shop, Bernie's on Park, at 636 South Park in Madison. We offer handmade silver jewelry as well as unique mineral, crystal, and fossil specimens from around the world. Store hours and more information available at berniesrockshop.com.
WORT thanks its listener sponsors and Union Cab of Madison. Union Cab is seeking drivers to join their member-owned collective, formed in 1979. Those interested in a position with flexible scheduling, benefits, and a democratic employee-owned work environment can find more information at unioncab.com or by calling 608-242-2000. You know my face is getting short and I got the blues. I got a fucking job and I paid my dues on the good foot.
And we're back. So I know you hate it when I do this, but I do a little gig work for some tech companies to train their AI things. It's like you have conversations with them. And,
oh, really?
And I'd mentioned before, and you kind of scolded me on it about, you know. But I always slip in every once in a while, like, you know, kill all humans. Which, you know. Little, you know.
Yeah, just to help out.
But I was doing some this week, and I was having this, quote, conversation with this chat bot.
Yeah.
And I was supposed to talk about the tariffs proposals.
Okay.
For the Trump tariffs, the Trump taxes.
Sure.
And so I, you know, expressed.
Did they pay you to do this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was expressing my opinion, and then the thing would answer back. Mm-hmm. And it kept asking me if I had any personal experience with the types of things I was talking about. Because I was talking about, you know, how
sure.
It would, you know, hurt the economy and, you know, yeah. Hurt jobs. And, you know, and it asked me that several times. So it kept coming back to,
yeah.
What is your personal experience on this? Which I thought was really interesting and a little bit scary that rather than, you know, looking at this, that it wasn't able to look at this from a big picture standpoint,
right.
That it had to personalize it and
right.
Say, well, tell me how this affects you, you know.
Yeah. And, it's death by a thousand cuts. It's hard to describe that as a personal experience.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, exactly.
I mean, it'll have an overwhelming effect across the board. Each individual will have probably a relatively small amount of effect, but it'll slow up things that could have been done with that money. It'll make things harder in the long run. So there's a cumulative effect. I mean, this is why people don't, until fairly recently, could blow off climate change. It's like, yeah, it's incremental. It's slow. You're not thinking it's going to happen, and it's kind of irregular, erratic, mm-hmm. You know, what the effect is.
Yeah.
But there's a directionality to it.
But it seemed like that was a very limiting aspect of having something like AI where it has to keep bringing it back to that level.
Yeah. Give me an anecdote.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Like, I don't want to give you an anecdote.
Humans like anecdotes. Yeah, like, well, I'm like, you know, and I would try to explain to it. Say, well, it's simple economics. When prices go up, then, you know, demand goes down.
Right,
I mean, everybody, you know, that's like the first thing you learn in an economics class.
So we're creating basically robot minds that are as stupid as humans.
We're creating, you know, we're creating internet trolls.
Yeah, great.
That's another thing that happened to me. That, speaking of internet trolls, I don't post online very much.
Yeah.
But I was following this a movie thread on Reddit, and they were talking about a movie that I had seen, and I didn't like the movie very much, and people were complaining about a bunch of.
You weren't hate watching; you were hate researching.
Yeah, I was just on. It was just something on TV, you know, streaming, and it was like, okay, whatever. And it was, but anyway, so people were talking about plot holes in the movie, and I mentioned one that I saw.
Yeah,
and apparently I missed something. Somebody wrote back and said, you know, how did the cops know this was the guy? And this guy wrote back and said, well, they had a description. And it's like, okay, that's fine. I missed something. You know, you corrected me. Yeah. That, you know, all good. Yeah. But then they added at the end, pay attention. It's like, why do you have to be mean? It wasn't your movie. Probably.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Why are you?
It might have been M. Night Shyamalan posting, but it's like, don't scold me because I didn't pay attention to a movie that I was watching on my couch while I was, you know, dozing.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't know. It's a little thing, but it just kind of.
I always, you know, when I, you know, I've been in the education biz for years now, and I always make sure that when I grade people's papers, I always write in there, hey, stupid, why did you get that wrong? That's one of the first things they teach you to do. So.
Oh, okay, maybe it was a teacher. Yeah, right. Pay attention!
I'm reading, I've never read Little Women, and I'm reading Little Women right now, and I'm actually enjoying it quite a bit.
I saw the movie.
You did see the 94 one wasn't bad. I haven't seen all of them, but at any rate. But there's a part where one of the girls is doing something in school, and the schoolmaster strikes her across her palms with a switch, and the mother, who's this indomitable woman, she's like, okay, you're not going to school. We're going to teach you at home.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like, no, nobody's going to do that.
Oh, good.
To our kids. Good. And I was like, wow, that's really. I was very impressed by that.
Oh, I would come home and tell my mom the nuns hit me with the ruler, and she'd say, well, you probably deserved it. So.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's how my sister and I got out of going to Catholic school, because my mother was going to send us to Catholic school because it was close. Yeah. That was her reasoning. That's my mother's reasoning. She didn't know what it meant. She just wanted to send us to a close school.
Just wanted to get rid of you.
Yeah, exactly. But the neighbor's kids came home one day, and they were just our next door neighbors. It was a twin boy and girl, and they were in the same class together, and they were crying their heads off. Mm. Patty and Gail were their names, and my mother was like, "What are you crying about?" You know, and I said, "We were bad in class today," and Sister Immaculata, or whatever her name was, turned up the thermostat, so the room got really hot, and said,
"For
this
hell.
One is going to be like in hell."
Oh.
And to my mother's credit, she said, "You're not going to that school."
Oh, that's funny. So, one time, I don't know what I did, but the nuns made me get up in front of the class and stand in the trash can. And
wow.
Just because I was garbage, apparently.
Oh.
So.
You're not garbage.
Oh. Yes, I am. The church says I am. Yeah.
So. Well, I've had that for years. Live with it.
So this was actually in The Guardian. This is Wisconsin news that made international news. Wife of Wisconsin man accused of faking his own death files for divorce. This was the guy that had the kayak guy.
Yeah, right.
And
kayak guy, we call him.
Kayak guy, we call him in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
and then he turned up in Eastern Europe somewhere with a woman he met online who was his true love.
Yeah.
You know, until his credit card maxed out and then he came back.
We call it the bride basket of Europe.
Do you know that under that reminded me of Melania?
Yeah, yeah. I can't imagine why.
Under Trump's proposal for to change the natural birthright.
To change the
14th Amendment.
Right.
With it by executive order or whatever. Yeah. But four of his kids would not be considered citizens.
Maybe there's a method to his madness.
So the wife of the Wisconsin man who allegedly faked his own death and fled to Eastern Europe has filed for divorce.
Oh, well.
What a shock. So this guy, what a slime. I mean, he didn't have the guts to go to his wife and say, the marriage is over. I want out. You know, and he has kids. I mean, instead, I mean, can you imagine how traumatic that is for kids to think that your dad drowned and they couldn't find the body? I mean, what a horrible, horrible thing. So anyway, he got hit with divorce.
There's a man who likes to avoid conflict.
I guess. I mean, I can relate to that. Yeah. When I was married, I thought about faking my death a few times.
Oh man, yeah, I can see that.
But on a happier note about wedded bliss,
mm-hmm.
A couple ages 102 and 100 just got married. They're newlyweds.
Excellent.
It's Marjorie Fitterman and Bernie Littman. They met at a Philadelphia nursing home after both their longtime spouses died.
Oh,
and they're newlyweds now. So
that's sweet.
So good for them. So they wanted to wait to get married. They've been seeing each other for a while, but they wanted to wait until all the kids were dead.
Actually, you know, we laugh, but you know that is a problem sometimes with folks who are getting up in years and married, that children can be quite upset by that, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, well, what about mom? Well, she's gone, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to get remarried.
What about my inheritance?
Yeah, well, there's that, too. Yeah. That's a good one. Hey, you will not be surprised that one of the most mispronounced, and I don't know if we can count this as an actual mispronunciation, mispronounced names in the last year, is the name of the Vice President of the United States, Kamala Harris.
Sure.
And, of course, people, I think, were actually pronouncing her name purposely wrong, to be
a-holes. Slam,
yeah. It's like, who is she? But there's other names, interestingly enough, that people, when the number two most mispronounced name in the last year, this is according to the language learning company Babbel and the closed captioning company, the Captioning Group. They released this list of names this week. Was the singer Chapel Roan. Apparently, people have all sorts of interesting. It seems pretty straightforward to me, but apparently, people have all sorts of interesting ways of mispronouncing this individual's name, including Chappelle Roan. How could you even get that out of what you were looking at? But there you go. The actress Zendaya, who has starred in Challengers, people often mispronounce her name Zendaya, but that's not the way to pronounce it, and. The online fast fashion giant Shein, it's often pronounced Sheen. And so there's just all sorts of interesting. The one that it didn't surprise me, because, of course, there's no reason why you should know it, was. Do you remember the Paris Olympics? They had that bizarre little hat.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Phrygian symbol of liberty or republic. And that was their mascot. It's pronounced as Phrygia. And, of course, it was, again, a nod to the Phrygian cat, but there's no reason why people should know how to pronounce that. That seems pretty straightforward. Anyway, so poor Kamala, among all the other things, all the other indignities, is that she's number one in having people mispronounce her name, according to various knowledgeable sources.
Mm. So this week, the amazing Kreskin died.
Oh, I remember that guy.
He was the master of mind games.
He knew you were going to say that.
I know. I had a little Kreskin board game when I was a kid.
Did you?
Yeah, it had like a kind of a little pendulum in there, and it was probably like a sort of like a fake Ouija board or something.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything else about it except the pendulum.
Did you have a Ouija board when you were a kid?
Yeah, we
did too.
Yeah. That's how we communicated with most of my relatives. They were like half dead.
Yeah, right.
But the Kreskin, I remember he used to always be on a lot of the talk shows,
sure.
Like the Carson show and stuff, and do these. But he did these mind tricks where he would say, oh, you're thinking of somebody, their name, you know, starts with a J, and they go, oh, yeah, I know somebody named James.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah. And a little more sophisticated than that. But he was 89.
People want to be fooled.
It's fun to be fooled.
Like fantastical things.
Yeah.
Like the jaguar,
the real
for
jaguar
example.
Who just pounced in.
He lives in a world of fantasy. That is a world I plan to see.
It's a happier place. So, how was your live show last week?
Oh, it went well.
Hang on here. We'll bring you up.
It was good. Not surprisingly... somewhat divisive of Roscoe Mitchell, but it was it was wonderful.
Very cool.
Excellent.
So
it's still in the archives. So another week.
That a listen. We had Roscoe Mitchell in the studio, so that was pretty cool.
By the way, we want to thank the people who pledged last week. We had our little birthday bash, and the Minions stepped up, and we had some. What are we doing with that money, Mel? Was there something we're doing with it? Are we going to Tijuana with Esty again?
The Texas Crypto Strategic Reserve, I think, is mostly
where we're going. Okay. I do notice that we have very nice new headphones the last few weeks. I don't know if that was from the last pledge drive or not. Oh, I see that the story you're pulling up was something I was going to mention, but please go right ahead.
I was just going to mention that... The last surviving member of the show, the Mod Squad, passed away. Michael Cole. And he had a Madison connection.
Yep, he was born in Madison.
Born in Madison. Yep. So, but he was 84. And I did the math. So the Mod Squad, they were supposed to be like these kids that the cops were using to, you know, this is when everything was trying to appeal to the youth.
Yeah.
And so these undercover kids were...
They were narcs, basically.
They were narcs. When you really
think
about it.
It's cool to be a narc.
When you think about it. Yeah, exactly. let's have a little...
You're doing the theme song?
A little theme music.
Okay, let's do that.
To get us in the mood here.
This is from the 60s and early 70s.
It's a great theme. But yeah, I didn't realize he was from Madison until I saw the obit.
I love the cheesy organ, by the way.
Isn't that great? It's a great theme. They're running, all holding on to each other, which is the most effective way of running. But
so their tag was one white, one black, one blonde.
Yeah,
and it, the only connection I ever had with this program was I never did watch it. Was the woman that was my girlfriend at the time was a lifeguard one summer up in Cleveland, Ohio. And it was a black guy and a white guy and her. And so they were the Mod Squad. She said it was one black, one white, one Jewish.
Oh, funny. So, well, they were supposed to be kids. They were supposed to be like.
Yes, but of course they weren't.
I did the math after I saw this guy, Cole's obit.
Yeah.
He was 28 when the show started, it ran for 5 or 6 years. Yeah, so, I mean, he was in his 30s at the end.
Right. But,
I mean, he pulled it off, I guess.
He had a baby face.
Yeah. But I loved that show for a while.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
It was very exciting. So, it just seemed really thrilling. There was a lot of running around and a lot of
action.
It's
funny,
you know, like everybody that age, every boy that age, I had a crush on Peggy Lipton. Well, not every boy. Don't give me that look.
I don't know. Link looked pretty good. I have to say, I was a very discriminating child. If it wasn't sci-fi or horror, I had no interest whatsoever.
Really?
In anything on television. Nope, really not. Hey, speaking of the young folks, the youngins, according to a new study done by the Pew Research Center, and we love them.
We love
the Pew people.
We do.
Nearly half of American teenagers say they are online constantly, despite the fact that they're aware that there are, you know, concerns about social media and smartphones affecting their mental health. As in past years, YouTube was the single most popular platform that teenagers use. And I got to say, I'm with you, teenagers, because I look at that a lot myself. 90% said they watched videos on the site, which is down slightly from 95%. But nearly three quarters said they visit YouTube every day. And, you know, I guess I'm a teenager at heart, because that's me too. There was a slight downward trend in several popular apps that teens used. For instance, 63% of teens said they use TikTok, which is down from about 67. But these things are faddish, you know.
Sure.
I mean, there's going to be some new thing that'll come along. And X saw the biggest decline, among teen users. Only 17% of teenagers said they used X, which was down from only 23% in 22. And that, of course, was the year that Mellon Husk bought the platform. Reddit stays pretty steady. It's about 14%, and about 6% of teenagers says they use Threads, which is Meta's lame-o answer to X.
Yeah, so. Blue Sky is the hot one now.
That's, is it?
It's kind of a Twitter clone, but it's nicer. That's their kind of vibe is that they aren't going to allow hate speech and stuff like that. So
that would be nice.
Yeah. So I don't. I'm on there. It's kind of fun. You know, it's with something like that. It takes a while to kind of curate your, you know, who you're following and,
sure.
and get your stuff, you know, in order to find the things that are of interest to you. So yeah. I'm kind of at that exploratory stage where just finding a few things. Speaking of TikTok, their annual carbon footprint is likely bigger than Greece. Speaking of Greece.
Yeah.
So
we need an ambassador to TikTok. No, Amazon's, you can get your stuff instantly. Yeah, you can get your stuff instantly because the roads are blocked with trucks continuously.
Right.
I mean, there's all these real-world implications of all this convenience and efficiency.
Yeah, so, I mean, I hate that I use Amazon, but I do.
Yeah,
and,
me too.
But when I select the shipping, I almost always select, like, the non-rush one, and, you know.
I just bought something from Amazon today. This week, I just got
it today. Was it broken when you got it?
No, it was not. They were the go-between with a bookstore that had old books. I got a paperback copy of Alan Mendelsohn, The Boy from Mars, which is a book that I used to really love.
Oh, okay, cool. So,
yep, it's about a little boy that basically he's in middle school, and he's kind of a nerd, and, you know, nothing like anything that you and I would ever know anything about. And he goes to a new school, and all the kids hate him because he's, you know, he's rumply and chubby and so on. And then he finds a friend, and his friend is this kid that claims to be from Mars. And it turns out they have a lot of adventures, and it turns out in the end he really is from Mars.
Oh, okay.
What happens in the book was very inspiring, though, because all the nerds hate each other because they're like, they don't want to be nerds. They want to be like the cool kids.
Yeah.
And what Leonard, and that's the main character, and Alan, the boy from Mars, do is they get all the nerds to get together and, like, prevail, like, get rid of the gym coach who's, like, mean and calls people names and have a yoga class instead. That was very inspiring.
See, when we were growing up, most of the gym teachers had been in the military.
Oh, yeah, Marines.
Either World War II or yeah. Korea.
Yeah.
And so they ran their classes like a drill sergeant, essentially. And, you know, you'd get in your squads and you'd have to do all this, you know, count off and all this.
Yep.
And I think it was part of the Cold War mentality, too, where they were trying to prepare us to fight the commies.
When I was in Eastern Kentucky, there was another overlay, though, which was constant preaching at you.
Oh, really?
My gym teacher was...
Jesus preaching?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was before we'd have, like, because it was also with health, you know, the health PE kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so we'd have these exams or papers or something, and he would tell us stories from the Bible. Like, once he told us something about Jezebel being eaten by dogs.
Oh, it was
like,
really?
To inspire us? Like, what is that? Well, Mr. Klein, what does Jezebel have to do with this? Shut up, boy. I know. It's people don't believe me when I tell them these things. It's just kind of like, yeah, that really happened.
Speaking of health class.
Yes.
I'll just read the headline because I think it says it all. New Florida sex ed curriculum excludes almost all information about sex. It's dirty. Don't do it.
Yeah,
right. That's brilliant, because if you don't tell teenagers about it, they won't do it. They won't know about it.
Oh,
they won't.
Is that
they won't
how it
even
works?
Think about doing it if
yeah,
you don't tell them.
Yeah, so, yeah. Because my mother didn't have sex education, and she had no idea how she illegitimately conceived me
when she was 16.
Hey, she conceived me when she was 15.
Oh, okay. Oh, never mind.
She had been 16 for a whole month when I was born. She was getting long in the tooth at that point.
One-fifth of people aged 16 to 65 in the study read at the primary school level or lower.
Wow.
So, yeah, they're finding that a lot of math and reading abilities are deteriorating.
Oh.
I have no idea why.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. I got a text here. Hang on.
Reading, math, who needs that? You know, they slowly peeled back all these different things we don't need anymore, right? We don't need this. We don't need that. Right. That's too much.
When am I ever going to use that?
Yeah, well, we're down to the nub now. We don't need that either, apparently. So. Reading and writing
just
out the
Jesus,
window.
I guess. That's the only thing we need.
The leader, ma'am.
Oh, yeah. So, we're almost out of time here, but just a quick note. RFK Jr. key advisor petitioned regulators to revoke approval of the polio vaccine.
Oh, my God.
Trump made some comment this week talking about RFK, saying that they needed to get to the bottom of this connection between vaccines and autism.
There is no bottom.
Well, that's what he always says when he wants to blow something off. But, it's like, no, there's nothing there. Just don't. So anyway, we got to get out of here. Time to declare the weekend. Enjoy the weekend. I think it's going to warm up a little bit. So I don't know.
That's okay. You know, we had the second hottest November ever.
Yeah.
Basically in recorded history last month. So it's okay. It's
Yeah. No,
I can deal with the zero.
Yeah. I mean, I took Clopsy for a walk in the woods yesterday. It was beautiful. It was, you bundle up and it's fine. So anyway, got to get out of here. The Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks For You with The Real Jaguar, Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues, Friday On My Mind, all kinds of great stuff here on your favorite radio station, WORT. And you are listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. Pants, was great to see you.
You too, bud.
Have a great week, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye. Get down.
This is the Insurgent Radio Kiosk for Friday, December 13th.
This is Bird Note. It's early morning on the island of New Guinea. The lowland forest erupts with the crowing calls of male Ragiana birds of paradise. Groups of male Ragiana birds of paradise perform elaborate displays to attract females. The size of small crows, the males have a yellow head, bright green throat, and a lush mass of fine russet orange plumes that hang well beyond their tails. In a sequence known as the flower display, the males hang upside down with their wings flexed downward while flaunting those russet plumes upward. Birds of Paradise, an aptly exotic name for this most varied and extravagantly decorated group of birds. All 43 species are found on New Guinea or nearby. Picture one named the ribbon-tailed astropia as it flies along the forest edge. With an emerald green head and velvety black body.